Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. Watch, chop, retrofit.
So did you guys think I was a dick?
I didn't think you were a dick, but you were pretty sloshed.
I got sloppy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, somehow that translates to me being a dick, but this is not a marital strife podcast. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 22 of Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs
like us
decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is...
The Traviator, a.k.a. Travis Bickle.
Oh... That's true. That his name is Travis. You know, I find that a lot of times the villain in movies is named Travis. It's messed up. And I will be your host. I'm joined, as always, here in the shop by my co-host and co-producer, Sean Alight.
Okay, got it.
A.K.A. the Irish Sean. And in addition, we are extremely excited to welcome back to the show for her three-peat,
woo,
her three-peat appearance. It is the Wolf of Chell Street. The Wolf of Chell Street. Thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And further description of the show, the tagline at the top says, watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older films, and then we hypothetically recast them with contemporary actors. We're not actually in favor of remake, reboot, sequels, all that bullshit. We're more doing this as an exercise in satire and irony. We try to be funny.
And sometimes we succeed, but it's with a long tracking shot that lasts about 5 minutes.
Perfect. And with that, we're going to go ahead and go into movie news. And as we are wont to do, we start this segment off with RIPs. And the first one is Virginia Leith, who was the female lead in Stanley Kubrick's first film. She died at the age of 94. I can't remember the name of the film, but I do know that Stanley Kubrick later disavowed it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And also, she was in, what was it, Sean?
The Brain That Wouldn't Die.
Which is also one of the best...
It's a great MST3K episode. That's a good one to start with if you're new to Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about Microsoft. Also, there was a second RIP, and I sent you an email or a message about it. Did you get that one?
It was a telegram. Yeah, Lawrence Paul.
Lawrence Paul, who was a producer,
something
like that. RIP to Lawrence Paul. He's actually the uncle of the guy in El Camino,
Paul. Yeah, Aaron Paul.
Okay. Is Aaron Paul's uncle. All right, also, Keanu Reeves is going to play a magic tumbleweed in the new SpongeBob movie called The SpongeBob Movie, Sponge on the Run. So that's fun. I hope that that's not going to interfere with Bill and Ted 3.
I don't think so. I think that probably takes priority.
And then I've also got Woody Allen settles a $68 million lawsuit against Amazon Studios. What is this about?
Well, Amazon had signed him up for like a three-picture deal.
Okay.
Which, first of all, not a good idea. I mean,
considering who the signee is.
Right. So, the straw that broke the camel's back for Amazon was the sexual harassment allegations against him for not Sun Yi, but another family member.
Yeah.
And so they're like, whoa, this is too much. And I'm like, really? That was too much?
He actually sexually harassed the Amazon drone. There's another story, and I'll let you take that one.
Oh, what? Adam Driver?
Yes.
He's been stalked by somebody dressed up in a Kylo Ren costume.
It's a weird future, y'all.
Wow.
We're living in a simulation. All right, is that the last one?
That's all I got.
All right, so that'll wrap us up on movie news for this week. And that will bring us to our next segment. As soon as that phone rings, that's right, it is time for the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
Ahoy, choppers.
I, too, have tried to bleach Kirk Cameron from my memory. There are times that I would love to go back in time and slap my 12-year-old self for having a raging crush on him. The actress in Killer Joe that I think Travis was referring to is Juno Temple. If so, she wasn't in Sucker Punch. I'll have to look up the viral video of Michael Rapaport with a cat. The one I remember seeing is the one where he was getting a haircut and a deer crashed through the barbershop window. Look that one up if you haven't seen it. Not so fun fact, at least on my local Craigslist, the missed connections section has become the icky personals since they got rid of the real and often icky personals. Boy Meets World was an ABC show, not Disney. It was part of the TGIF lineup for a while, along with Family Matters, Hanging with Mr. Cooper, and Step by Step. I guess while our teenage loins were lusting after Sean and Topanga, our Sean was watching more highbrow stuff. See you next week.
All right. Thank you, Dana, for that. And I know a guy who can get you some bleach. That will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department, which brings us to the theme of the episode. He makes the best fucking friends. He makes the best fucking friends. In honor and celebration of his 76th birthday, we are talking about the films of Martin Scorsese. So he is a Italian-American filmmaker, actor, and historian. His career spans more than 50 years. He's part of the new Hollywood wave of filmmaking, and he is widely regarded as one of the most significant and influential filmmakers in modern cinematic history. He's also been the subject of a little bit of controversy lately.
Oh, yeah.
With his comments and opinions about Marvel movies. So where do you guys stand on that?
You know, they're not for everybody. They're for most people. But I understand where Scorsese was coming from in that it's not high cinema.
Yeah.
However, I will say that, you know, Marvel has taken the superhero genre and has elevated it pretty high.
I agree.
So I think that he's, you know, welcome to his opinion, mm-hmm. and I understand where he's coming from, but it was kind of an insulting kind of way of saying it, I think.
There's been some speculation that he is only saying these things now because he's angling for an Oscar for The Irishman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
What do you think, Chelsea?
I kind of agree with Sean, like, you're entitled to your own opinion, but you don't have to be a dick about it.
Ah, fair enough. All right, so let's go ahead and get into our next segment, which is the Midnight Double Feature. And this is where we go around the panel and we each talk about two films that we feel are appropriate to the theme and could be successfully shown back to back in, say, a public forum, like a midnight double feature. So, Chelsea, would you like to go first with yours?
Sure. This one is really just kind of personal to me. Like, if I was going to watch a double feature, I would watch this.
Okay.
So the first one is 2004's The Aviator.
Okay. Starring Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes. And I have a weird personal connection to this story.
Interesting.
So my grandma's cousins, they lived in California, and Dar was his name, and he worked.
Dar?
Dar.
D-A-R?
D-A-R.
Daughters of the American Revolution?
Not that. That was just his name. And he worked for TWA and worked with Howard Hughes. I can't remember the character that it's based off of. I tried to ask my mom.
Okay.
But yeah, he was a pretty big part in all of those dealings.
Very cool.
So
I thought
it was interesting.
That, what's her name? She played Queen Elizabeth. She was also Katharine Hepburn in The Aviator. What is her name? You know.
Off the top of my head, I don't. Sorry.
Kate Blanchett.
Kate Blanchett,
oh,
yes.
Okay.
Very established British actress. She did a fantastic job playing Katharine Hepburn. All right.
And so I'm going to pair that with a movie that I just saw like recently this year.
For the first time?
For the first time. And I'm super, super mad that I didn't know about this, but I'm so glad I found it. The Last Waltz.
Last Waltz is incredible.
It's fucking phenomenal. I love it. Yeah, it's a great little doc.
So it is a documentary about the band. But who's it about?
It's just
the band.
Yeah.
So, Robbie Robertson and Levon Helm and the professor and various other members of the band are joined on stage by huge names. Bob Dylan.
Cavalcade of guests.
Neil Young. Joan Baez.
Van Morrison.
Van Morrison. Yeah, it's an incredible documentary.
It's so good.
The fact that they were able to document that is just something for the ages.
I think we talked about this on a double feature several episodes back. I consider this to be one of the best concert films, along with Talking Heads.
Stop Making Sense.
Yeah, the Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
Brian De Palma, is that right?
Brian De Palma, possibly.
Didn't he direct that? Anyway, yeah, those two are great, and this is a good pick. Those are really good.
All right, so Sean, what did you go with for your double feature?
I'm picking two of his Robert De Niro flicks. First off, I'm going with Taxi Driver, 1976. Okay. Starring De Niro, Jodie Foster. Travis Bickle.
Thank you. It rhymes with pickle.
Jodie Foster, who plays a very, very young streetwalker.
Mm-hmm.
And Sybil Shepherd, who is a campaign worker for a politician. And Travis Bickle is a war veteran, Vietnam veteran. And he's an insomniac. And so he spends his time driving a taxi cab at night. And it's a very bleak tale of isolation.
Yes.
And just personal mental torment.
Yeah. I mean,
and delusion.
He's basically a psychopath, right?
Yeah, he is a psychopath, yes. but it's like a nice slow simmer before it kicks into a boil. And I picked these two specifically for another film we're going to talk about in the in our movie marathon.
Okay.
But I'm following this up with 1982's The King of Comedy.
Okay.
Starring De Niro, Jerry Lewis, and Diane Abbott. De Niro is a delusional character who thinks he's good at stand-up comedy.
Yep.
He has this fantasy world of worship for Jerry Lewis's character, Jerry Langford. He is
who's a very established comedian.
Established comedian, talk show host, mm-hmm. kind of a Johnny Carson type persona. And he aspires to be on his show and knock it out of the park with his great stand-up routine. And things kind of go downhill.
Yes.
All right. So those are my pairs. And real quick comment about, Scorsese. He loved De Niro.
Very much loves De Niro, still loves him. He has muses.
And the reason I bring this up because Chelsea brought up DiCaprio.
Who is mm-hmm. his current muse.
And I don't think he's the right muse for Scorsese.
Hmm.
I think DiCaprio's films with Scorsese are not as good as Scorsese is
with
a filmmaker.
De Niro.
Not just De Niro, as a filmmaker.
Okay.
Look at Shutter Island. Look at The Departed.
I think that The Departed is fantastic. I also liked The Aviator a lot. People give Shutter Island a bad rap. Quit knocking my man DiCaprio.
I don't think it's a good pairing, quite frankly. But, I think he leans on him too
you
hard.
You see, like, De Niro, DiCaprio.
And Gangs of New York, right?
Yes, Gangs of New York.
See, he just... that bothers me a little bit, and that's just a personal beef.
All right, well, speaking
You're
of...
You're entitled to your opinions, but don't be a dick.
Oh,
nice callback.
Speaking of De Niro, I went with two Martin Scorsese movies that feature Robert De Niro as well. First, I went with Goodfellas from 1990. It's got a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it's the story of real-life gangster Henry Hill, who's played by Ray Liotta. And he might be a small-time gangster... He may have taken part in a robbery with Jimmy Conway and Tommy DeVito, played by Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci. So basically, it's a gangster movie.
I want to know who the 4% are who don't like this film.
Right?
Yeah, who are they?
This has one of the best tracking shots in all of cinema.
Yes, and a great soundtrack.
Oh, fantastic.
And also a voiceover narration that I don't mind.
Yeah, and Lorraine Bracco is fantastic in it as his wife.
So
good.
But I'm going to pair that with 1995's Casino, which has a unbelievably low rating of 80% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think, obviously, it's not quite as good as Goodfellas, but how could you be? And this is set in the early 70s, Las Vegas. A low-level mobster named Sam Ace Rothstein, played by Robert De Niro, gets tapped by his bosses to head the Tangiers Casino. He also has problems with his old friend and enforcer, Nicky Santoro, played by Joe Pesci, and his girl, Sharon Stone, who has problems of her own. We talked about her on her own episode. I believe that Casino might have been part of my double feature on the Sharon Stone episode. True, true. And then also her ex-boyfriend, James Woods, is a problem to be dealt with as well. But the real connective tissue, the tie that binds between these two movies, is that they're both based on books by Nicholas Pileggi. Nicholas Pileggi is the author of the books that both Goodfellas and Casino were based on. How do we feel so far?
I feel wonderful.
You're wonderful?
Wonderful.
Good deal. All right, so that means that we're going to go ahead and go into our feature segment, which is the recast. And the recast is where we take a particular film from the catalog of our subject, being Martin Scorsese this week, and we hypothetically recast a few of the lead roles. So the first one we're going to do is from 1967. It was Martin Scorsese's feature film debut. It was also the feature film debut of one Harvey Keitel. It's called Who's That Knocking at My Door?
Oh, you know, I really thought you'd love me. You know that? You really had me believing that.
I do love you. That's why.
What? That's why? Because you love me, that's why. You're not going to marry me? Oh. What kind of business are you handing me here? What are you handing me here?
You'll always find a way to bring it up.
Well, you're damn right I could bring it up. And if that's the kind of a broad you are, I'm to blame. Because I feel the way any reasonable guy would feel, I'm to blame for this, huh? Hey, listen, you would be glad that I'm willing to marry you.
Oh, J.R., please.
Hey, look. That's right. You had to just make a fool out of me, huh? You just couldn't wait till I crawl
back.
Okay,
okay, have it your way.
Oh, sure, just like that, huh? Don't try and convince me.
Oh, how could I convince you to do anything you don't want to do?
Well, who said I didn't want to do it?
Then I wouldn't have to convince you, would I?
God damn it, boy, you gotta twist everything up all the time, don't you? Just gotta twist things around. Well, that's not what I meant, brain.
What did you mean?
I don't know. I don't know. Listen, I told you that I loved you. Now, what's wrong with that? Isn't that enough?
Nothing's wrong with that, but no, it's not enough.
Well, why isn't that enough?
It's not good enough.
Not good enough?
No.
Well, not good enough. Oh, you mean I'm not good enough? Is that it? Well, let me tell you something. It's not me, it's you. Who do you think you are, the Virgin Mary or something? Leading me on like that, letting me in here at this hour of the morning, huh? Well, come off it, will you? What are you handing me? What kind of broad does that make you, huh? And tell me something else while you're at it. And who else is going to marry you while you're at it, huh? Tell me that while you're at it, you whore. Because that's what you are if you don't know it by now, you whore. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. Honest to God, I didn't mean it. I'm just so confused by this whole thing.
Go home. Go home.
It is about an unlikely romance that forms between streetwise New Yorker J.R. and a more highbrow girl called The Girl. My actual review of this was that it was a case study in Catholic guilt and the Madonna whore complex, as well as gender stereotypes, basically.
Absolutely. And It's if the purpose of film is to make you feel something, this movie succeeds.
Correct.
It will piss you off. The toxic masculinity exhibited by these Italian Americans is such a stereotype reinforcement, but hey, Scorsese's Italian American, so there has to be
stereotypes.
Some truth.
Aren't for nothing.
Well, it's a it's shorthand for the truth.
Yeah,
is what I've always heard. But yes, it's pretty maddening because it's an indictment of this Madonna whore complex, rape culture, rape denial culture.
So let's go ahead and spoil this movie from 1967. The girl that he puts on a pedestal. He sees her as a bride rather than a broad.
Right.
She observes these opinions of his and feels turmoil because she has to reveal something to him, which was that several years ago she was raped. Raped on a date, and he
blames her. He flat out blames her.
Flat out blames her,
and it blows his mind.
Yeah.
And first of all, let's just say the rape scene was masterfully done.
Yeah.
Oh, that was gut wrenching.
It was gut wrenching, and the music was amazing. Because
also,
he kept
without revealing anything to
no, it wasn't vulgar.
It wasn't graphic. Yeah. But the music, the way he would take Scorsese took like sections of music and like overlap them.
It
and
was
then, like,
chaotic.
Them.
And
yeah, a lot of chaos, and you felt boxed in like she did. So hats off to him for that. It was just an exquisite scene and an awful scene at the same time.
Yeah, I give this movie high marks. I think that it was pretty awesome.
I did too.
Even though it was, like you said, upsetting and it'll piss you off, but for your first feature film.
Oh, he came out swinging.
Yeah. All right. So the two roles that we're going to recast are JR and the girl. JR is played by Harvey Keitel, and the girl is played by Zena Bethune. Zena Bethune. All right. So, Chelsea, do you want to go first with your JR?
Sure. This is a total face value pick.
Mm-hmm.
And my actor was in The Girl Next Door, Speed Racer, Into the Wild. I'm going with Emile Hirsch.
Oh, Emile Hirsch. Nice. Yes. Yeah, I think that actually could work out pretty well. I see the face value. Mine's better, but, you know. Go ahead, John.
Rude. So rude.
mine is also a bit of a face value pick. However, I think that this actor is a fine actor, and it ironic.
So's mine.
And ironic that it's on a Scorsese episode, given what's going on with him right now.
Is it Leonardo DiCaprio?
No, he's 23 years old. He did a voice in the upcoming film Doolittle.
Wait, what animal does he voice in Doolittle?
Jip.
Oh, okay, yeah, of course.
He is going to play
of Scorsese.
He's going to play Nathan Drake in the upcoming adaptation of the PlayStation video game series Uncharted.
Okay, I heard about this. Who is it? Tell me.
It's Spider-Man. It's Tomas Holland.
Tomas Holland.
He looks
very
just
nice.
Like him.
Yeah.
The young Keitel.
The his birthday, he doesn't call it a birthday. He calls it Hollandaise.
Oh, my God.
And so I guess it's my turn. I also went face value. That's my theme. My actor is 28 now, as Harvey Keitel was at the time. And I've shopped him and chopped him multiple times. It's okay, though, because he's a perfect fit. He was in Project X. He was in Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. He was in Kong, Skull Island. And he was in the recent cash grab, Lady and the Tramp. His name is Thomas Mann. Thomas Mann is going to be JR in my proposed remake of There's Someone Knocking at My Door. No, Who's That Knocking at My Door? Is that right?
Yeah. And I was doing a Alexa search for this, and she thought I was asking, who's that knocking at my door?
Literally.
And so the results of the search were pretty ridiculous.
There was a show on NPR maybe yesterday where they were talking about, home devices, Alexa or smart hubs or whatever. And they're like, okay, so We're going to be saying the names of these things a lot during the show. Go ahead and mute your device so it doesn't think we're talking to it and trying to wake it up. So that's a weird future. Next up, we've got the role of the girl played by Zena Bethune. She was 22 at the time. And Chelsea, how do you feel about this? Feel good?
Yeah, I struggled with this one a little bit.
You're a little bit apprehensive. That's fine.
My actress is a little bit older, and I'm not sure she's that well known. She was in Spring Breakers.
I like Spring Breakers.
I love that movie.
Look at all my shit.
She was also on the TV show Pretty Little Liars, and she famously is dating Cara Delevingne. I went with Ashley Benson.
Ashley Benson.
Yeah, I don't know if...
Okay.
I'm pulling her picture up. Hang on.
So she's in a lady relationship.
She is.
That's cool.
Lady relationship.
That's a very yeah. tactful way to put it.
I like it.
Well, why do you have to be tactful? They're
because
lesbians.
I'm
they're girlfriends.
Professional, and I like to keep things cool.
Does it
Next
make you
up,
uncomfortable?
Sean.
Okay, so my actress is 23 years old. She has a connection to Thomas Hollande.
Thomas Hollande.
In a unintentional way on her part. She was in The Descendants. She played the daughter of Maleficent.
Oh, I know who you have.
And
that's a cartoon.
Yeah. And she was in the Disney Channel teen sitcom Livin' Maddie. But she's been voicing lately on all the Marvel cartoons. Gwen Stacy, which is famously the girlfriend of Spider-Man.
Sometimes.
It's Dove Cameron.
Dove Cameron. So does she have like a butterface? Is that why she's only doing voice
work?
Oh,
no. She's no butterface. No. She was actually in Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and this is where it gets confusing. She played a character named Ruby, I think. Yeah.
Why is that confusing?
Well, because you're in the Marvel Universe voicing one character and then playing another on camera. There have been a few others who have done that same thing, and it's odd to see an actor playing two different characters in the same universe.
Interesting.
Well, it's like Captain America, played by Chris Evans.
Chris Evans.
He was also the Human Torch
in the Fantastic Four. One of them,
which is a Marvel property, although a Fox production. Yeah. Still confusing.
I see. I'm actually really confused now. Whose turn is it?
It's yours.
All right, my turn. My girl, who was originally played by Zena Bethune, who was 22 at the time, my actress is 21 now, and she was in Super 8. She was also in The Neon Demon. She's in Galveston, and she was in The Beguiled. It's Elle Fanning.
Nice.
Elle Fanning would be perfect.
Elle Fanning would be really,
really good.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so...
You win that pick.
I win! All right, so in terms of recommends, I will go first. I'm going to say I recommend this film.
I do, too.
Oh, me three.
All right.
You were so mad, though, after you watched it.
I know!
She's just three-peating all the time.
She was
Fuck
mad.
You.
She was mad after she watched this.
I was furious, but it was one of those films that like sits with you, and yeah. I hated it.
The
and then I saw
where
the big
says,
picture.
I forgive you.
Oh, that's oh I was like God. Screaming and yelling, yes. "Fuck you!" Yeah, I was mad.
All right. Well, with that, we're gonna go ahead and go into intermission, but not before we say. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and get yourself something to eat. Please, you look skinny.
Stromboli, calzone, a pizza.
All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis, and I just have one question for you, Sean. What is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under
review. Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it. And multiply
a Podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes.
You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show, don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our 2019 movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
And we're back. Thank you, Chop Shoppers, for bearing with us during the intermission. Chelsea just had to take a really long time to solve a video game crisis. And when we come back from intermission, what do we like to do, Sean?
Beer check-ins.
And so we're going to go ahead and crack open our on-theme check-in for this week, which is a Birra Italia. It's Peroni. The most stereotypical Italian beer that you could possibly drink.
How is it stereotypical Italian beer?
Because it's like the Budweiser of Italian beer. While we enjoy that, we're going to go ahead and get into our 2019 movie marathon.
Yeah.
And today is the 320th day of the year as of this recording. And I, unfortunately, did not watch two more movies since the last time I talked to you. So I'm on 318. Sean, what are you on?
I am on 359.
359
Start
movies,
that
dude.
Final countdown.
Oh, man, that song was on the playlist for last night.
Ew.
And it never made it around. There was like 7 hours of music, though. And 350 80s movies trailers.
Nice.
It's real good stuff. All right. Well, my first check-in for this week is going to be number 310, The Joker. It's actually just called Joker. Joker, the one with Joaquin Phoenix. And my review was such a dark version of this character's origin story. Yes, there are a lot of parallels between this and The King of Comedy from 1982, but that is only a framework. Many more metaphors abound. And Sean, you wanted to say something about this, right?
Well, yeah, that's why I brought those in as the double feature as well, because it's a bleak interpretation of the Joker origin. There are nods to Taxi Driver and King of Comedy.
Definitely, like, overt nods to King of
Comedy. And I said, in my review, I said, you know, this borders on derivative. My one big knock on the film is, this isn't spoiling anything because it's a Batman-related film.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to see the fucking Batman origin vignette of his parents getting killed
another fucking time. The Mask of
Zorro? Oh my God, again with this.
Or is it Zorro the Gay Blade?
I don't know. It's just, I'm so sick of seeing this portrayed on film. It happens every damn Batman movie. We've seen it. We get it. Okay.
And side note, this Peroni is better than that double IPA.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree. Okay, my check-in. I'm jumping in on another Scorsese film. I consider it to be the sequel to Who's Knocking at My Door.
Who's That Knocking at My Door?
This is Mean Streets.
The spiritual sequel.
I consider it that. It's about a bunch of Italian street toughs trying to climb the mobster ladder.
Also starring Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel and a very, very, very young Robert De Niro. And De Niro is essentially like Jughead in Archie comics.
Okay.
He is stupid in this movie.
And in reality.
But I don't know about that. Is he?
Yeah, he's a dummy. You heard it here first, folks.
This film is racist. It's homophobic. It's sexist. Where Who's That Knocking at My Door kind of has a message to the audience. I don't think Mean Streets has that same kind of message. These guys are just idiots. And there they are. He's just splaying them out for you to make your judgment, I guess. There are some bad sound edits and cuts in this film, which surprised me for a Scorsese movie.
I saw some cuts in Who's That Knocking at My Door? There was some visible cuts, which these days would not be evident in a Scorsese film.
All right, what you got next?
All right, so my next check-in is going to be number 314. It's called Crawl.
Oh, God.
Crawl.
Fun movie.
So I'm going to go ahead and just read my review. I said, oh, I get it. Like crawl space. Because they were in a crawl space the whole time. And it's in New Orleans? Are they in New Orleans?
They're in Florida.
Florida. And it's a hurricane and it's flooding and they are trapped in the crawl space and gators get in. Gators/crocodiles. And I'm not sure. They were very menacing. And so I said, serviceable Jaws style thriller. I totally called Effie from Skins. Ah. The actress who is the main lead, the daughter, is Effie from Skins. If you've never seen Skins, check it out.
I thought that scene in the bathroom that was shot from the ceiling down, where she has to get in the shower.
Yeah. That was cool.
I thought that scene was really, really well done for a horror flick. I thought that was really fun.
And I made my lovely wife, Michelle, drink. Watch it as well, and she did not appreciate it.
I thought it was fun.
I thought it was a lot of fun. It was kind of schlocky and predictable.
It was still daytime though when we watched it, so she had plenty of time to work that out of her system.
All right, hot on the heels of your Joker check-in, I'm going to talk about Wrinkles the Clown.
Okay,
Wrinkles the Clown was put out on digital. I think it might be a Magnet film. It doesn't know what it wants to be. Part of the film...
It's new, right?
Yeah. It came out with Joker about the same time.
2019?
Yeah. It's part hoax, part reenactment, and part documentary.
Hmm.
And it's based on this viral sensation of this clown that parents can call to terrify their children.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of playing on the... and exploiting the... scary clown meme.
Yeah. It's a boogeyman kind of thing. I did not like this.
Okay.
Like I said, it doesn't know what it wants to be. It could have been told in 15 minutes runtime. Don't waste your time.
Okay. So, like, is it presented in, like, a Blair Witch style?
It's presented as a documentary.
Okay.
At first.
Found footage?
No, it's presented as a documentary, but mockumentary, because it's not really the guy who does it. It's revealed midway through that it's an actor, and they're just recreating what they think would be a cool story behind this guy.
That's lame.
And then they cut to the real guy who's doing these viral videos, and the cast of friends and family who are helping them make them. It's all a put-on. There is no Wrinkles the Clown. There is no guy that will terrorize your kids.
Spoiler alert, folks.
Oh, I'm sorry to ruin your day.
All right, so do I have one more? I do. It's number 318. It's called Earthquake Bird. And I just watched this yesterday. I was looking forward to it because it is starring two of my favorite female actresses. We've got Riley Keough, who is Elvis's granddaughter, something like that. She's a descendant of Elvis. And then also the girl from Ex Machina. What's her name?
Alicia Vikander.
Alicia Vikander, yes. And it is a murder mystery slash thriller slash love triangle movie. And it wasn't good. I was so disappointed. Like, I love both of those actresses, and I was really looking forward to it, but it was just so slow. So it's about an expatriate who is living in Tokyo in the 80s, and she is embroiled in, like I said, a love triangle, and then also accused of murder when her friend disappears. So if that appeals to you and you have like 7 hours
to kill.
All right, you got one more, Sean?
Last check-in, the live-action, quote-unquote live-action, Lady and the Tramp.
That's boo. Gross. Let me go ahead and tell you my review.
Go for it.
It was money sign, money sign, money sign, money sign, money sign, nostalgia. Money sign, money sign, money sign, money sign, money sign, money sign.
Absolutely. Once you get past the nightmare fuel, and I mean nightmare fuel, yeah, of these talking dogs, it's sweet, it's nostalgic. The voice acting is not terrible, and there are no racist cats.
Yeah, they replaced them with Egyptian sphinx.
It was terrible. It was awful. They did
the whole song is "We Are Siamese,"
and I understand that they had to change the song. They didn't have to change the breed of the cat.
Yeah. I mean, also, we're in 1910, and we're set in Savannah, Georgia.
There we go. You're getting there.
And an interracial couple, Jim Deere and Darling, are an interracial couple, and nobody blinks an eye.
Nobody says a word.
One more thing that made me mad is that the puppies at the end, they were rescues. They were foster dogs. As opposed to the real story, the progeny of Butch and Lady fucking.
Yeah. There's all kinds of things that they quote-unquote fixed that didn't need to be fixed.
Did not need
Those dogs should be fixed.
And ladies and gentlemen, please remember to spay and neuter your cats. All right, so...
Wait, can I say something?
Yes, please.
Because I watched a movie based on your guys' recommendation.
What was it?
Peanut Butter Falcon.
And?
I fucking cried.
It's so good, right?
Yes.
I'm giving this Oscar juice.
Oh my God. It was Oscar so good. Peanut Butter.
I think that maybe Shia LaBeouf is nominated for Best Supporting Actor. And if Zach doesn't get a nomination, come on.
So
what world are we living in?
So I found him on Twitter.
Yeah?
And a couple of months ago, he was like, oh my gosh, 100 followers. Thank you so much.
Nice.
And now he has like way more, but it's, I love
so
it.
So good.
I love
that
it.
That movie was the best. I teared up a lot too.
Oh, I was just like happy sobbing. Like, yes. This is the best movie ever.
So that's your check-in on the movie marathon.
Good
Wonderful.
Job.
All right. Well, that'll wrap us up on the 2019 movie marathon for this week. And that brings us to the second part of our feature segment, which is the recast continued.
Part two.
The sequel.
Super Recast Brothers Racist Italian Edition.
Electric Boogaloo. And so the movie that we're going to recast in this part is going to be from 1972. It's got a 48% on Rotten Tomatoes. Of course, it was directed by Martin Scorsese. It's called Boxcar Bertha.
Boxcar Bertha and her boys took what they wanted.
Yeah, 50s. It's 50.
Meet Boxcar Bertha, queen of the gun toters.
Ooh. Impatience, please.
I think we got them.
Here he is, right here.
That's it, that's it.
Yeah. Lady would like to say something.
Yes, I'd just like to say this is a holdup.
Bertha was a fun-loving gal.
Stand up. Sit down. Now close your eyes and open your mouth. Now don't move.
She had a taste for loving and an empty boxcar for a boudoir.
I've been lots of places.
You ever been with a man?
America in the 30s was a free country. Bertha was just a little bit freer than most. Big Bill Shelley was a man fighting all the wrongs in the world.
We're gonna grind him in the gravel! Go on, do it!
Vaughn was a mystery man, an on-talker. He was a doer. Bertha and her gang made a name for themselves with the police, but the newspapers were too polite to print it.
Hi.
You're coming with us.
Robert, Billy Boy, don't make me do what I want to do.
Run, Bertha!
Hey!
Car Bertha is his second feature right after Who's That Knocking on My Door? And it is loosely adapted from the autobiography of Bertha Thompson, portraying the adventures of the Depression-era criminal following the death of her father. Bertha, Barbara Hershey, played by Barbara Hershey, joins union organizer Big Bill Shelley, played by David Carradine, in fighting anti-union forces after an unexpected murder drives them to a life of robbing trains. So they go from, union organizers to train robbers in, like, basically a day. They just kind of switch gears, and that's fine. Sean, what did you think of this movie?
Well, I have to set you straight on one thing.
What?
It's not an autobiography, and Bertha is not a real person.
Oh, it's fictional.
It's written by Ben L. Reitman as if Bertha were a real person, and it's her biography. Look up Ben L. Reitman, do his Wikipedia. He was a communist and a bit of a scoundrel himself.
Huh. Okay.
But anyway, my take on the film?
Yes.
If you like Naked Barbara Hershey.
Her Barbara Hershey's kisses.
Yep. This is the film for you.
She has puffy nipples. That's what we're saying. Chelsea, did you watch this one?
I did.
And what did you think about it?
It reminded me of this series of books that I used to read when I was younger.
The Boxcar Children?
Yes.
No.
And then I just thought of it. I was like, oh, this reminds me of that. Yeah. Minus the nipples. Yeah, so for sure.
They didn't have a lot of nipple scenes in the Boxcar Children book series, but that's okay.
Well, and I started doing some research about Barbara Hershey because I was like, is this the woman that gets fucked by the spirit in Entity? So I started reading
about
it. That's
where her boobs go crazy.
Yes.
And I didn't realize that her and David Carradine were actually together.
Yep.
And that story is fucking bizarre.
Well, I mean, David Carradine, he's a weird dude. If you don't know about how he passed from this earth, look it up.
I do know. But do you know what they named their son?
Autoerotic asphyxiation.
No, they named him Freedom.
Oh, okay.
And then he got her to change her stage name to Seagull.
Whoa.
Right? It gets fucking weird.
Yeah, I do remember that, Seagull. So I guess if my name was Freedom, I would just go by Free.
I think they changed it to like,
or Dom
Thomas Dom? Or something.
All right. So the three roles that we're going to recast are Boxcar Bertha, played by Barbara Hershey, Big Bill Shelley, played by David Carradine, and then Rake Brown, played by Barry Primus. Not to be confused with the awesome band Primus.
I know, right?
Ooh, I love Primus.
I want to drop a music drop right on that.
Do it. The riddle's all about tonight. I would say that, Chelsea, you're going to go first with your Boxcar Bertha.
Okay. How old was Barbara Hershey in this?
24.
She, at the time, was 22.
Four.
22.
Okay, either way, my actress is a little bit older. She's 28, but I thought of her immediately when I was watching this. And she was in The Fault in Our Stars, The Descendants, Divergent series.
Wait. The Descendants, the animated film?
No, the one with George Clooney.
Oh, it's just called Descendants.
Okay, thank you.
The Descendants is the thing that Sean brought up earlier.
Okay.
Yeah.
You called it the Joker, even though Joker.
Sure
I mean,
did.
Small details. Anyways, it's Shailene Woodley.
Shailene Woodley?
Yeah.
Shailene Woodley is awesome. That's very good. I think that's a great pick. I really do. Props.
Thanks.
You're very welcome. And Sean, what did you think?
My actress is 23 years old. She was in True Grit.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Ender's Game.
Yep.
The Edge of 17.
Oh, yeah, she was.
She's rumored to be in the upcoming Marvel TV series Hawkeye as Kate Bishop, a.k.a. the female Hawkeye. And she's currently in the TV series Dickinson as Emily
Dickinson.
Now,
why can't Jeremy Renner just play the female Hawkeye also?
He could, because he's a pussy.
Oh.
Hey. Boom.
What's her name?
It's Hailee Steinfeld.
Hailee Steinfeld is an amazing actress. You guys are throwing it to the next stadium. No, wait. You're batting it out of the park. That's what I meant. All right. So my actress is 27 now. She's an Italian model and actress. She's in a movie called Divorce Party. She was also in the reboot of The Ring called Rings. And she's in a very good revenge movie called Revenge. Her name is Matilda Lutz. Matilda Lutz is going to be my boxcar Bertha.
Cool.
All right, taking it to the next one. We've got David Carradine, who was 36 at the time, playing Big Bill Shelley. So he's a union organizer. He's a communist. He's a train jumper, a train guy. He likes to sleep on trains. Chelsea, what did you think about this role?
I struggled thinking about who I was going to recast.
The struggle is real.
It really is. And I might have missed the mark on this, but I couldn't get him out of my head only because of Peanut Butter Falcon.
Oh.
I went Shia.
Shia LaBeouf. Very good. I could see it. I could see that, especially with the like union organizer role. Man, Peanut Butter Falcon was so
good.
All right. Sean?
I went with an actor who is 36 years old, and he was in Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
Oh, okay.
Fast and the Furious 7. Ew. He was in 42. He is in NCIS.
That's a TV show.
He is in Sling Blade and was in the TV series American Gothic.
Yeah.
Lucas Black.
Lucas Black.
I can see Lucas playing a southern, you know, train jumper union organizer.
I like the way you talk.
I like the way you talk.
All right. So my actor, oh boy. Like I said, I had a really hard time.
Oh, I did too.
I
struggled on that one.
There is no other David Carradine. But my actor is 39 now. He's a little bit older. He was in Hell or High Water, which Chelsea mentioned recently. He's also in Outlaw King, the Robert the Bruce story. He's in Wonder Woman, and he's Captain Kirk on Star Trek. His name is Chris Pine.
Okay.
Chris Pine is going to be my David Carradine Big Bill Shelley.
He's a little handsome, but...
Yeah, he's a little bit too handsome, but like... How do you find somebody who looks like David Carradine? Right. Come on.
I was looking for actors who had a martial arts background.
Yeah. Really weird that he was cast in Kung Fu because he's not Asian at all.
Right?
At all.
So like, good, though.
His background is Irish and Scotch-Irish.
Now, his dad was in this film, Scots-Irish. We should also mention.
Yeah.
He was a dick.
The Carradine acting clan. So, next up, we've got the...
Rake. We got to rake the leaves.
It's Barry Primus, who was 34 at the time, playing Rake Brown, who is also a train person, but he's a gambler.
He's a New Yorker, and he's found himself down south, and Boxcar Bertha has to teach him how to speak Southern.
Okay. Her Southern accent wasn't great.
No.
So for the role of Rake Brown, Chelsea, who did you pick?
So I thought Rake was like an Eddie Haskell. He felt very slimy and icky, and I wanted to take a shower after I saw this movie because of him. He just left me feeling gross.
That's very dramatic.
It felt dramatic. Mm-hmm. So the actor I picked, I thought could pull this off. He was in The Disaster Artist, Spring Breakers, 127 Hours. I went with James Franco.
Yeah, there you go. So James Franco makes you want to take a shower?
I think he can pull off this like gross the Eddie Haskell. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Sean, what do you think?
I should also say that it was purely unintentional, however subconscious. All but one of my recasts have a tie to superhero movies.
Weird.
And superhero TV shows in direct correlation to our conversation about Scorsese shitting on Marvel. So that's interesting. Anyway, this actor, he is 37 years old.
Okay.
He was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Robbie Reyes / Ghost Rider. He is in...
Is it Nicolas Cage?
No. It's not Nicolas Cage. You're thinking of the wrong Ghost Rider. That would be funny, though. I would love that. I'd be down for it. But most people will know him from the current Terminator Dark Fate.
Oh.
In the role of Gabriel / Rev 9. It's Gabriel Luna.
Yeah, man. Gabriel Luna is good.
And he rocks the mustache.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, hardcore, dude. That's a good pick. My actor, I was extremely surprised to find out that he's 60 years old. What the fuck?
Oh, shit.
He's in The Perfect Storm. He was in a movie called Too Late. He's in Winter's Bone. He was also in Three Billboards. And he was in The Peanut Butter Falcon. His name is John Hawks. John Hawks is going to be my actor for this role. Can you believe he's fucking 60?
Does not look 60.
It's crazy. I think that he didn't like come onto the scene until he was 40 or so.
He doesn't look a day over 45.
Yeah. John Hawks, man. He's 60 years old and he's going to be my Rick Brown. All right, so... In terms of recommendations, I'm going to go ahead and give this one a soft recommend.
So that's a recommend.
Yes.
It's not a recommend.
I'm neutral, therefore, it's a hung jury.
Oh! Very good. Anything else we need to say about Boxcar Bertha?
No, it's passable.
It is what it is.
There were some cool camera moves on some of the fight scenes.
Yeah.
Some really neat camera following the guy that was getting like punched and falling away from the action.
However, off of the train.
However, the god awful red paint for blood. Oof.
Oh, that
Oof, that bordered on B movie quality.
True.
I'll never eat a Hershey Kisses ever again.
Okay.
Ever. Well,
sorry about that.
I'm going to enjoy them even more now.
Yeah, right?
That's disgusting.
I'm going to...
I'm only going to call them Barbara Hershey's Kisses from now on.
We're not friends anymore.
We are. We're still friends. Guess what? We're going to Friendsgiving in a minute.
We are.
With that, we're going to go into our bonus segment, which is going to be a grand battle royale between the new Hollywood wave of filmmakers. We've got Martin Scorsese versus Francis Ford Coppola versus Brian De Palma versus Steven Spielberg versus George Lucas. And Chelsea, you get the honor of going first.
Okay, so I'm going to pick George Lucas.
Okay.
Because I love...
For Star Wars?
Because I love Star Wars, but also because I watched the first two episodes of The Mandalorian.
Wait, the second episode is out?
Yeah. Don't spoil it. Don't spoil
it. I'm not spoiling anything, but
I only saw the first one.
I'm fucking obsessed.
All right, I'm not going to Friendsgiving. I'm going to go and watch
this. It's only 30 minutes, so you could squeeze that in.
I can technically.
I'm obsessed. He wins. I love it. I love everything. All right.
Well, you know, he didn't really have anything to do with it.
Yeah, but his name is on it, and he created that universe,
Yeah.
See, that's why I think George is the first one to go in this fight.
Oh, okay. Go fuck yourself, Sean.
He's a one-trick pony.
Look.
Okay, folks. Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck is amazing. It's
fucking amazing.
I love that movie.
No, terrible. You know, Spielberg, has been well documented on this show, downhill.
All right.
Brian De Palma, great. However, the body of work, I don't think, comes anywhere near as close to Coppola or Scorsese. Those are my two lead horses in this race.
And?
Coppola did the Frankenstein movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to go Scorsese.
All right. Well, I'm going Coppola because he's going to go all Godfather on your ass.
Okay.
He's going to do you a favor. And... Sometime he's going to ask you for another favor. So that is going to wrap us up. I want to thank our guests tonight. Chelsea, thank you for being here with 3P.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for thanking me.
Thanks for remembering to thank me.
Thank you for 3P-ing. And also, do you have anything you want to plug?
No.
Nothing to plug?
Trivia's on hiatus. So.
That's true. Chili Cook-Off?
Oh, yeah. That's on the 20th.
The 20th, Chili Cook-Off. Don't come to Chili Cook-Off. It's a private event. And then, Sean, I want to thank you for doing what you do. Also, all of the engineering and stuff. That's really good stuff. I appreciate
it. I'm getting
you.
Better.
Yeah? And do you know what next week's episode is?
Oh, yes. This was at my recommendation.
In a blatant but somehow successful attempt to get Knowles back on the show,
we're doing birds movies.
Ka-ka! Yeah, it used to be my house.
I'm the chicken lady.
And so we're going to have Travis Knowles, professor of biology and bird enthusiast, on the show. And we're going to talk about and hypothetically recast The Birds and also
Fly Away Home.
Fly Away Home. All right. So with that, we want to go ahead and plug the podcast itself. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. We're on iTunes. We're also hosted natively on Podbean. We are at Cinema Chop Shop on Twitter. Our Facebook is facebook.com/CinemaChopShop. Our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And then the really good beer that we checked in today is going to be checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we're Cinema Chop Shop on there as well. Thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And please remember to
watch, chop, retrofit.